You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
For more brain and body energy, I believe that sleep is one of the best strategies. It's also there to be able to stop the aging process and maybe even reverse your biological age. Now, the 7 to 8 hours of sleep is essential, but the quality of sleep, to me, trumps the hours. If you get 20% of your total sleep cycle to be in the deep sleep mode, now you're right on the right track here and ahead of the game. And one of the conditions that affect our sleep quality is sleep apnea. And it really hasn't been discussed enough. I don't believe so. Now, we believe that sleep apnea only affects people who have large tongues and tonsils. You know, maybe they've got a thick palate with that large uvula. You know, the bell-shaped tissue that hangs in the back of your throat, you know, that nobody really knows what it's for. Now, of course, you know, let's not forget that people think sleep apnea is, it only affects people who are overweight and obese. Now, today we have Dr. Joel Gould. He's an expert on sleep restoration and author of Soul Sleep, The Modern Epidemic. He's here to bust all of these sleep apnea myths and tell us the real truth about what may be plaguing millions of us every day. Hey, thanks for being here, Dr. Joel.
Hey, Suzanne. Great to be here.
Now tell us, what is sleep apnea and really tell us the truth about it?
Sure. Well, sleep apnea is one of those things that nobody really wants to hear about. So the actual word apnea is Greek for without breath. And it's a pretty good description of what sleep apnea actually is. It's when you actually stop breathing. Now, it's called obstructive sleep apnea when some part of your airway collapses, like your tongue falls back, which is the most common. But the early signs of this is snoring, when the soft palate rattles a lot. That's a sign that the airway is becoming too relaxed. There's also central sleep apnea where your brain decides not to breathe. And sometimes people have both, and it's called mixed apnea. And this is always... Basically, through Medicare, they came up with a definition of how many times per hour you have to stop breathing for 10 seconds or more. So what's interesting is that if you go to a sleep lab and have a sleep study, you can be told that you don't have sleep apnea because you have to have stopped for 10 full seconds, 5 times every hour. Now, you could have stopped breathing for 8 or 7 seconds, 20 or 30 times an hour, but you would go home without a diagnosis of apnea. And this is what happens to a lot of people who know there's something that's not right with their sleep, but they don't get a diagnosis of apnea. So I really want to dispel a lot of the myths that come along with this disease. And definitely you're correct about, you know, through dental education, we learned that this is a disease for people who put on weight, they let themselves go, they don't take care of themselves. And basically their heavy weight in their neck causes this apnea. And I want to turn that completely upside down, let everybody know. But that's the end stage of the disease. This is a completely different syndrome than anyone is thinking. And so when it comes to treating sleep apnea, people know about the CPAP mask. And as a dentist, I use an oral device. And those are your two basic treatment modalities to treat sleep apnea. There's a third one, and that's surgery. And I want to be very clear that some people do need surgery. If you've got a deviated septum and you can't breathe through your nose, surgery is great. But for the most part, doesn't work on tightening up or removing that uvula that you mentioned, soft palate. That's a surgery that always relapses because that's not the cause. The cause isn't tissue in the way. So in my office, we started to test people for home sleep testing because nobody wants to go to a lab. It's quite uncomfortable to be sleeping in a foreign place. And people are much more receptive to the idea they could be tested at home. And I wanted to test myself, of course, to see how I was doing. And I thought I was a great sleeper. I could sleep anywhere. But I found out that I had actually moderate apnea. And it was a shock because I'm not that old and I'm not that heavy. And I was really surprised. Why would I have sleep apnea? And I kind of joked and say, I'm a good person. I take care of myself. I take vitamins. I exercise. I eat right. And that's the funny part is that, you know, we think we're being healthy. But I discovered that the biggest issue when it comes to poor sleep is actually vitamin D deficiency. So I'll pause there. That's a lot of information, Suzanne. So that's my story. I found out that I was completely vitamin D deficient, and that is why I had apnea.
I'd like to just get into a little bit about the basics. I mean, sleep apnea, why is it so important? I believe it actually has to do with the lack of oxygen. I mean, if you don't breathe, you're not getting oxygen into your brain and your major organs. So the symptom that most people complain about when they have sleep apnea is that they're tired in the morning. They don't feel rested. And maybe they've even felt like they slept for 8 hours, but they don't feel rested. And often sleep apnea people, they feel a headache in the morning because that headache is from lack of oxygen. But now what you're saying is one of the, let's go even deeper of what's the cause of sleep apnea is the fact is you're saying it's vitamin D deficiency. Now that is completely something new. I only know about it because of course I've studied all this already and you and I are good buddies and we talk a lot about this. And and we've studied, under Stasia Gomanek as well. But I want you to give us now the real truth about sleep apnea, because now we're digging to the cause, the root cause of it.
The root cause, yeah. Yeah, and that, you know, that's the one thing I talk about in my book is, you know, treating the symptoms of disease is something we've been doing, but the root cause of what apnea is, it's just really fascinating. So this is a disease that can happen at any age, and it's often even can happen in children. And children that die from it is known as sudden infant death syndrome. And you can find that there's scientific studies linking sudden infant death syndrome to low vitamin D. So this is apnea in babies. Now, what happens is that, you know, hopefully most of the people listening to this are more aware of what vitamin D levels should be versus what they just happen to be. And most people who don't supplement vitamin D certainly aren't spending enough time outside. So almost everybody is deficient. And what I want people to understand is that these bodies were designed in equatorial Africa with unlimited solar or UV radiation, and vitamin D was never something that we didn't have enough of. This is a signaling or messaging molecule. And what the levels that people are walking around with, these are not evolutionary levels. These are caused by people wearing clothing, living indoors, and a host of other things. But now we have a general population that doesn't have enough of a signaling hormone that helps regulate the posterior brainstem, which controls the sleep cycles and paralysis in sleep. So when you get into sleeping and you sleep 8 hours and you don't feel well rested, what's happening and what apnea really is that as you get into the deeper stages of sleep, stages 3 and 4, deep sleep and REM sleep, your airway is becoming too relaxed and there's a signal that there isn't enough oxygen coming into your body. Now, in earlier cases, this signal is, there's an alert to the brain and you release cortisol and your brain basically wakes you up out of that deeper sleep to breathe more deeply, inspire, bring more oxygen in, and then you basically can get down back into that deeper sleep. Now, that's called an arousal, is when your brain says there isn't enough oxygen. And these arousals can happen 2, 3, 5 times an hour, or in more commonly 20, 30, or even 60 times an hour. And so what you have is, you have somebody who's trying to get into the deeper stages of sleep, but keeps on getting bumped out or knocked out because the body has a choice. It can breathe or it can sleep, and we choose breathing every time. You know those mitochondria, that's your expertise of those mitochondria. They want oxygen, and they're not going to be happy if they don't get it. So sleep is sacrificed for breathing all the time. And so what happens is, and even with younger, healthier people, as the airway starts to collapse a little bit more and more, the signals goes to the brain to wake up over and over. And then when it gets to be people who've had this disease chronically for a very long time, their brains actually don't register. They're saying, hey, listen, false alarm, enough. I wasn't dying. I wasn't being chased by a lion or a tiger. I was just fine. And so their brain starts to ignore those signals to get up. And those are the people that stop breathing for longer and longer periods of time. Now, when I was diagnosed, there were periods of 2 minutes where I stopped breathing. And this is important because we can track this on a pulse oximeter where somebody stops breathing long enough to drop 4% oxygen. And that's how we screen people. And so if you're stopping breathing long enough for that oxygen level to drop, you're really stopping. Now, the two dangers of that, obviously, are hypoxia, which you're 100% correct, and lack of oxygen, you know, it'll speed cancers advance. There's a million things that hypoxia will cause. But the other major thing that this causes is an interruption of your hormone release, because we only release our hormones in a pulsatile way in the deeper stages of sleep. And then when we get into REM sleep, that's our time to reconfigure our thoughts, but also the brain cells change porosity, and that's the opportunity for your brain to flush out the toxins that have been accumulated all night long into the lymphatic system, which is the lymph system for the brain. Now, if you're not getting into those deeper stages of sleep, you're not releasing the hormones that make you feel happy and comfortable, and you're not getting rid of the toxins that you need to. And these two things start to build up, a lack of proper hormones and toxins in the brain, and, you know, we start to look at neurodegenerative disease. And so that's why people are waking up with a headache, because they're basically, it's like someone standing over them with a pillow and every 30 seconds putting a pillow over their face and smothering them. And the body's fighting this all night long. It doesn't know that it's safe in bed.
So tell us then, though, how the vitamin D is related. Let's be more, I want to be more precise about this. What does vitamin D do to our brain and our sleep center?
So vitamin D is a really interesting molecule. It's my favorite molecule. And it does many different things. But what the most interesting thing, past calcium regulation. So everyone, now the dentist, we learned in dental school that you need to have vitamin D to absorb calcium, which makes perfect sense. Your teeth and bones are made of calcium. But when it comes to the other functions of vitamin D that are, you know, more newly investigated, is that it's an epigenetic moderator. It allows access to your genes. And this is a hormone or a pre-hormone that is made on our skin by sunshine. So this is a proxy for season in our bodies. And you can think of it this way. If you live by the equator, you never ran out of vitamin D. But as we migrated north away from the equator, we didn't have as much sunshine. And no one's recognizing the power that this molecule has. Is this grants access to our own DNA. So having a full complement of vitamin D up well past 40, probably into the 60 to 80 nanogram per milliliter range, is, you know, evolutionary. And having less than that doesn't allow access to a lot of your actual DNA. And what needs to be transcribed in a lot of these cases are enzymes and proteins that allow for proper functioning of neurons. And what everyone, you know, when we're walking around with a level well below 40, I think, you know, you test your people, most people are well below 30 even. And what we're looking at is a broken system. We're looking at a vitamin D dehydrated system. So you're looking at a brainstem function that simply is malfunctioning because it doesn't have enough of a critical messaging molecule to allow access and transcription to those neuron DNA to make the chemical products to function properly. That's the first and main new function of vitamin D. And, you know, a lot of doctors aren't aware of this. Anyway, and this accounts for the increase in over 200 antimicrobial neuropeptides, your capsaicins, your defensins, your natural antibiotics. Those aren't made below levels of 40 of vitamin D, and that's because you're not transcribing those areas of your genes to make these products. So people sort of need to change their perspective on this. And what we really see is that sleep apnea is actually the outward sign of the disease that I'm calling in my book the modern epidemic. And that's basically a lack of, you know, sunshine, connection to the earth, because people are not going out in the sun. Their vitamin D levels are low. And there's a lot of other factors, you know, a lot of carbohydrates and sugars. But this is a symptom of a greater disease, which is basically poor brainstem function, your autonomic nervous system that controls your sleep. It's showing you it's not working right. But that same system that controls your circulation and your digestion, this affects everything. The sleep is the outward sign that we're seeing of this disease.
So, you know, I know that you mentioned about yourself. Once you started raising your vitamin D level, you felt a lot better, and your sleep apnea also, right?
I mean, right.
You know, sometimes
it's a loaded question, Suzanne, because what's the sort of the status of the funniest thing about this is that I've had Crohn's disease since the age of 14. And though I've been very lucky, I was only hospitalized once. You know, it was something that I've had to deal with. And there are some other things that come along with Crohn's disease. So I wasn't thinking about that at all. When this happened to me, when I found out that I had sleep apnea, I discovered Dr. Sasha Gomanek, the neurologist that put these things together. And so what I decided to do was treat myself with sleep apnea because I clearly had, you know, moderate apnea. And so the program that I was already doing in my office, I modified it by adding vitamins and supplements because that's what was missing. The old devices I was making were good, but they weren't going to reverse sleep apnea. So I decided that I was going to create a sleep restoration program and change the name because sleep apnea is a gross name. It's an accusation of poor health. And sleep restoration is more positive. You want to get your sleep back. I had lost my sleep. I was choking clearly in my sleep. You know, so when I started to do this, it became clear that everybody was, you know, started actually discussing this with my patients about vitamin D. And what I found out was that some people had been told they were low, but I had never been checked myself. So I found that I was at 18 nanograms per milliliter, which is quite low. That's low for anyone's recognition. Even, you know, 20, anything below 20 is really severely deficient. So I raised my vitamin D level and I did my sleep apnea program. And I put some vitamin K2 and some other chemical elements that I wanted to add just to see how things would go together. And my sleep apnea got much better. I started to sleep. I felt great. But the strangest thing happened is that my Crohn's disease reversed, and it was really shocking. And so, you know, led me to a conclusion that Crohn's disease is part of this syndrome. This modern epidemic I'm describing is that the human animal is designed to function at vitamin D levels well over 40. And I had never achieved that. And unfortunately, my body never worked right. And restoring my body's vitamin D level and my sleep changed me so profoundly that I lost about 30, 35 pounds. You saw me recently, Suzanne. And right. I was obese most of my life. And, you know that I wasn't really heavy, but I was a bigger guy. I didn't know that all these things were simply tied to my body never having had a full complement of vitamin D to allow access to all of my DNA. And so my body started to heal pretty quickly. If you know anything about vitamin D and what it does for the immune system, when you give your body a full complement of this messenger chemical, your body can restore itself. So I kind of had a miraculous discovery, and it made me really want to be proactive about bringing this information out there so that all of the other kids, just like me, who are suffering from this demoralizing, shameful disease, carrying extra underwear and rescue supplies, this is tragic. Not only that, you know, the kids who are suffering from anxiety and depression, they're walking around with a vitamin D level of 25 when it should probably be 65. And there's a lot, you know, so that's sort of my message. And I'm seeing this through the lens of sleep apnea, because people have this issue and there's no way to treat sleep apnea without recognizing that the root cause is a hormone deficiency.
So, you know, a lot of my patients, I check on their vitamin D level, of course, and it's hard to get it above 45 without supplementation. Now, what I also do, I look at their genetic methyl genetics, and I look at some of their genes, and one of the genes, it's called VDR, TAC, VDR, BSM. It has to do with the gene variant that changes the receptors. And that's what I've got. I've got problems. I've got double SNPs of the VDR TAC. So I need extra sun as well as extra supplements. How much sun do you recommend, and how much supplement do you recommend for the average person?
Well, so it's very interesting. You know, everyone's very fearful of the sun. And, you know, one of my statements I always like to say is the sun doesn't cause cancer. Inappropriate sun exposure causes cancer. And it's important to understand that, in that when you go out on the weekend and you haven't been out in the sun, you don't have a base tan, you've had no exposure. And so you need to build up your vitamin D through sun exposure quite slowly. You don't want to go out too long. You don't want to burn. So what I recommend is a combination. I recommend supplementation up well past 40. Once you get past 40, the majority of the enzymes and different chemical mediators that you weren't making before start to become, you know, there in enough volume, and so that you can actually make the photochemical protective products. So I don't recommend going out in the sun until you have a higher vitamin D level. I still recommend 60. And then when you actually go out into the sun, you'll tan very easily in a short amount of time. And then you just go out for 10 to 15 minutes. You know, safe sun exposure doesn't mean lay out in the sun, but the sun, you know, if you're careful and you slowly build up a tan through natural sun exposure, 10, 15 minutes, and then increase a little bit as the season goes on, then you can really start to maintain a higher level. And there's different changes in your body that sort of shield you from sun damage, and you build up a little bit of a tolerance to it, and the upper layers of your skin become more reflective. But so it's sort of tough to get you. I like to get both, because the sun gives you so much more than vitamin D. You know, nitric oxide is produced, and definitely cholesterol, sulfate. And there's photochemicals that are made only in sun. So I like a combination of both. The problem is, if you live north of a line drawn between Atlanta and Los Angeles, there's about 4 months out of the year that you simply can't make vitamin D naturally. Even if you go out at noon and lie flat and expose your body, the sun's angle just isn't high enough in the sky for the UVB radiation to strike you to cause the transformation of that cholesterol molecule into vitamin D.
Right, right. You know, I want to mention about, I was in Charleston for the total eclipse, and the total eclipse that came just recently, right?
Right.
I really understood at that moment that the sun was super powerful. I mean, much more than just what we know about what the sun is for, not just vitamin D. You know, I'm more and more convinced that the power of the sun is so much more than just UVB and the vitamin D, because the animals and the insects and everything just completely stopped when it was in that total eclipse for a minute and a half. And I felt that whole ancient galactic sun is so much more important, You know, it's yeah. amazing. It's super amazing.
Yeah.
And you mentioning about the vitamin D and how much we need vitamin D, and so supplementation. Some doctors recommend taking 50,000 IUs at one shot, and I don't think that's normal. I don't think that's natural. I think that we need it every day. Do you believe that too?
Yeah, no, it's not. So, I like biohacking. I like taking charge and doing certain things. But when when I wanted to raise my level, before I went outside, I took 20,000 units a day because that's a nature. That's Mother Nature's sort of maximum amount that you can make. But you would burn if you did that on your first day out. So I never recommend taking more than 20,000 unless I get somebody who's got a 9 or a 7 or a 6 when their tests come back. I say take 40,000 for a week and then drop down to 20,000 because that's pretty low. But I always want to stick close or sort of match what Mother Nature is doing. And that's, again, why I like to do the combination of supplements and sun exposure. But Suzanne, before we go too far on that, when you talk about sunlight, everyone needs to understand that it's only the UVB radiation that anyone's been paying attention to. The UVA radiation is much more powerful and kind of even interesting. And also infrared radiation is massive. And that's the frequency that affects our mitochondria. So I know that there's so much talk going on about some newer studies showing that this infrared radiation actually decreases the viscosity in the mitochondria, allowing for faster spinning of ATP synthase and generation of energy. So sunlight is so tied into our biologic bodies. The planet would just be a cold hunk of rocks without the energy of the sun. It makes perfect sense that any life on this planet would be directly linked to that external radiation input. We're solar-powered animals. I think it's incredible.
Exactly. I know that, you know, we learn in Biology 101 that the sun, or at least photosynthesis, the production of chemical energy is in only plants and maybe cyanobacterias the green animals, green plants, right? But truthfully, I believe all mammals do. And there's been some studies that I got so excited about talking about how we can activate our mitochondrial function just by using sunlight and making sure that we have plant and green material, meaning like chlorophyll in our body. So I think that every living animal microbe is linked to the sun, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what's so interesting is that people, they view it as something that's toxic, and it's really sad. You know, the other thing that for my book research, I was writing a book about vitamin D and sleep, and it turned out to be basically a recognition that we are disconnected from our evolutionary origins. And I discovered earthing, and I kind of snickered at it for the first like 20 times I looked at it. And then 2 weeks later, I was actually sleeping on earthing sheets, and I go for a walk every day if I can on the beach. I don't know if it works, but just the recognition that these animal bodies, we evolved outdoors. We were custom designed by the laws of physics on this planet. And why wouldn't we be interacting more with our environment? We do, taking a charge from the earth and taking energy out of the sun. It's amazing.
That's right. So then, you know, we get our blood tested. We want our levels to be anywhere from 60 to 80 nanograms per milliliter. And, you know, in my practice, I recommend patients to actually get their blood tested every season to see how much they need, pretty much. You know, because some seasons you don't get enough sun. Some season in summertime, you might get a lot of sun, depending on where you're living. And then once they figure out their levels, they can manage themselves throughout the year and make a difference. I know for myself, with the higher levels of vitamin D, I sleep deeper, I'm more relaxed, I have more energy and brain health, meaning like I can focus better and all that.
Yeah. Well, you've restored your body to what it was designed to function at. And again, it's only our perception that people are, you know, that there should have higher levels, or the 31 or 35, this is normal. This is not necessarily correct for our bodies. And, you know, one of the things I discussed in my book, and I kind of like, is that you can raise your level and stop taking supplements and just get about an hour of sun at noon, or maybe 25 minutes of sun at noon for 2, 3, 4 weeks, and then go check your level. And if it's summer, you're going to have a level that's going to stay nice and high. You'll never go too high from sun exposure, but you can with supplements. So I think that your plan to supplement in season is really great. I mean, you need to have more than one test. This is one of the most important chemical messengers in our bodies, and we need to know more about this. And you know that I've been developing a vitamin D meter so that people could test at home. And that's something I see as being a huge benefit to doctors and dentists and everyone, be able to, on the spot, get a baseline for what your vitamin D levels, to know how to supplement just to maintain your health.
That I think that's going to be such a big game changer, having a meter at home so you don't have to go to the doctors and do all that. And then, of course, that's about self-care. To me, self-care is the healthcare, and that's what you're suggesting.
Yep. That's the future. Things have to be made understandable for the average person. So, how do I maintain good health? So, if we can make these type of tools more available with clear instructions on why you should be doing this, people will really be able to take much better control and charge of their health. And I'm really excited to be bringing this type of healthcare forward where, we can store things more organically. I think pharmaceutical medications are great when you need them, but boy, I want to stick to the organic stuff first.
I'm a big believer in that. Well, where can our listeners learn more about you and your work, Joel?
Sure. Well, my dental practice is called Modern American Dentistry. We have locations in Manhattan Beach, which is my main office, Santa Monica and Northridge, California. And it's modernamericandentistry.com. And then my book is not released. I'm really eager, really looking forward to getting it out there, but the timing's got to be great. It's got to be really ready to go. And that's called Soul Sleep, The Modern Epidemic. And that's www.soulsleep, as in sun and sleep.com. And you can check out some of the stuff I have going on to help people be able to control their health with their vitamin D level.
Excellent. Okay, Dr. Joel Gould, also his last name is spelled G-O-U-L-D. And Soul Sleep, I really look forward to that book. Can't wait. I'll be one of the first, I'm sure, to get it. Okay, until next time, go out there and live your best life today full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.